Well, good afternoon, everybody. Darren Saul, your host of Playing With Perspective, the Suspended Animation Podcast. Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's doing really well. You had a nice weekend. And I have episode 82 here today with a fantastic life mastery wizard, Adrian Hanks. How you doing, Adrian?
Hey, really, really good, Darren. Great to be here. Wow, 82. What a 82. Great achievement.
We're growing. and for everybody out there, we're going to be chatting about a lot of different things, but in particular, Adrian's new book. And the topic of the podcast episode is 100 years on from George Orwell's 1984, 2084, Peace, Freedom, and Strength. And I'm going to give everybody just a little bit of a rundown into who Adrian is. So, life mastery wizard positively supports, guides, and inspires people to create and live a more holistic and healthy, focused life with plenty of well-being, meaning, passion, and purpose infused into it. Adrian is a very skilled and experienced professional counselor, psychotherapist, coach, and teacher, which are all part of the top-level leading-edge services he offers. Adrian does not stay inside the box. He thinks and works way beyond those limiting parameters. He's also a writer. And as I mentioned, we're going to be chatting about his new book today, 2084. So from the old Big Brother 1984 world of George Orwell to the new hopeful 2084 world from writer Adrian Hanks. Welcome, my friend.
What a great introduction, Darren. Thank you. You're very humble.
Thank you, mate. So tell everybody a bit about you that I might not have already covered.
Yeah. Oh, well, how far do we want to go back? Let's go back.
We got plenty of time.
I'll give you a little bit of a brief bio and bring a bit of fun into the mix as well, if you like.
Yeah,
so born in the early 60s, 1963. You can work out my age pretty quickly then. 57 in a couple of months' time.
Nice.
Born in the UK in the county of Gloucestershire in the Cotswolds, very quiet country town. Had a beautiful upbringing in my primary school with an amazing primary school headmaster, Mr. Gingell, who was my first ever real mentor.
Oh,
I realise now in hindsight, like an incredible human being, and guided me in the right direction from very early age.
That's great.
I then hit about sort of 13 and 14 and hit the rails, sex, drugs, rock and roll, girls, did the whole gamut for a number of years, went off the rails, was a wild punk rocker.
Yeah.
At the Mohawk and did the whole Sex Pistols thing in the UK.
I love it.
And really just had a pretty wild time on the outside. But on the inside, there was this budding artist, writer, creator. Yeah. So although I had this external experience in my life of being out there and being wild, the inner Adrian was actually quite a creative, quieter being.
Right, wow.
And trying to juggle the two was always an interesting challenge, but I managed to do so and stay alive.
Nice, well done.
Through my wildness. And then 19 years old, got out of the UK, went traveling around Europe, and ended up in Berlin, which was an incredible experience. So went back to Europe, back to Berlin a few times.
What took you to Berlin in particular? Why was it Berlin?
I was actually traveling around the south of France and Germany doing the fruit picking, the grape picking for a few months. And then my uncle was in Berlin. He was in the military.
Right.
And I actually had an old school friend who'd moved to Berlin as well. And it just seemed the most logical place to go to after after traveling around. I knew that David Bowie had been there with his music.
Fantastic.
Other pretty amazing musos.
Yep.
So I went there in 1982, back again in 83. And then in 84, I actually moved to Berlin, where I ended up living for 4 years, three and a half years. And it was in 1984 that I actually read Orwell's 1984.
Yep.
So that was the beginning of my love for George Orwell. He's one of my most favorite authors. I became a student of his work. I read pretty much everything he's ever written, including his essays and journals and other things too.
Actually, that might be a good, because I didn't know much about George Orwell and his book either. So maybe for the viewers and the listeners, tell us a bit more about who George Orwell was and the book 1984. What was the impact and what was so special about that book?
Yeah, absolutely. Orwell was, his real name was Eric Blair.
Yep.
And he took the name George Orwell, the River Orwell being a river in, yep, in England. And he was writing a lot of political essays at the time. He went off to Spain and he fought in Catalonia,
yep,
and wrote Homage to Catalonia. Down and Out in Paris was quite a famous book of his as well. Then, of course, Animal Farm was his
empirical
work around communism.
Yep.
And as a reporter, as a somebody who was well-versed and well-traveled, he was very aware of the communist influence around the world that was already in place.
Yep.
And it was building. And he was very much aware that if we weren't cautious and careful consciously, that this communism stroke fascism would actually take over the world. And he wrote his piece on it in 1948-49. He wrote that and called it 1984. And of course, the whole Orwellian story is now, you know, Big Brother. It's pretty well known across the planet.
Wow.
Very prophetic, his work. If you actually look at what's happening currently now with the drones, with the information overload, with the whole idea of CCTV cameras and Big Brother, freedoms being taken away, you know, COVID-19, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, face masks, et cetera. You know, it's actually pretty scary. And I will say, if you want to know how to control people, here's the manual, you know, Orwell wrote it.
Wow, that's amazing.
And there's a lot of parallels, Darren, you know, when you really start to look at what Orwell wrote and what's actually happening on the planet.
Wow.
It's a little bit scary.
Crazy.
As our civil liberties are being taken away, our freedom is being taken away, inch by inch, you know, foot by step, and it's a little bit scary, particularly currently in COVID.
Yep.
No demonstrations on the streets. That's been totally stopped through fear, through the propaganda of fear, which is exactly what Orwell was writing about. So very interesting. So, yeah, I've just always been in love with Orwell's writing and love the way he writes. I love his political analysis, his social analysis on human beings.
Yep.
And being a little bit of a socialist, let's leave it at that. Not a communist. I don't adhere to communism, but absolutely socialism is my love. I love the idea of socialism in its truer form, not Marxism as such, but socialism.
And so what prompted you to write the book now? Was it, is it something in a particular point in time, or why did you decide to write this book?
Yeah. I've read 1984 several times, and about 5 or 6 years ago, I was rereading the book and there was a passage, and I'll share the passage with the readers as well, because it's on the back of the book anyway. And there was a particular phrase that just hit me, and all I can say is I felt like Orwell was speaking to me in that moment. There's no other way to explain it. And I had a moment of inspiration where I felt like I had poetic license to go and continue the story and expand the story. So I'm just going to read on the back here what it says. It says, it was from reading just a few words in part 3, chapter 6 of Orwell's 1984. That Adrian felt the first inspiration spark for the plot of 2084. And these are the words. It was that her waist had grown thicker and in a surprising way had stiffened. Hmm. Now, these few words were left sitting for almost 70 years for Adrian, me, to read and decipher with his own poetic license. And they're the link and the bridge that seamlessly unites the worlds and the people from 1984 to 2084.
Wow.
That little phrase, I'm not going to expand on it because it'll ruin the, I don't want to do a spoiler in there.
Sure.
But those few words link the story.
Yep.
And, you know, so she's thicker in a set, and Winston, who's the main character, notice this about Julia, who's the other main character, and from there I started writing. I had this this inspiration to write from that one little sentence.
I don't want to give away, you know, the ethos of your book, and, you know, of course, but can you give us a bit of an insight into what people can take away from the book, or what the meaning of the book is, why should people read this book?
All right, so a little bit of a backstory to the book. We have Winston and Julia from 1984.
Yep.
Jump forward 100 years. And a couple, Miranda and Jacob, twins,
yep,
are studying their family history.
Yep.
Going back into the old buildings around London from that time. And they find articles and different pieces of paper and clues to link their history way back,
right,
to that Orwellian time with Julia and Winston.
Yep.
And I've taken some of the context and wording of Orwell to bring in the flavor of 1984, the dark times, the controlling times. Leap forward 100 years, and we're now in a new paradigm of hope. The planet is doing well. There's been a global shift that happened in 2066.
Yep.
In the book, in terms of a future perspective, where the whole planet changed because of this one global experience that unfolded. It's like a cosmic event. Yep.
Beautiful.
And people had an awakening, a global awakening.
Great.
And from that, they lost the new world order, and another system or systems were put into place where everything is living in harmony and peace. So it's a very hopeful book in terms of this new paradigm. Yep.
And kind of forces us in a way, or inspires us to, you know, look at things differently, change our perspective, learn more about ourselves and about the world, and find more harmony and peace in this crazy time.
Absolutely, Liz. So it's all about the leadership, in essence, as well, because there's a new global leadership.
Right.
And I've based a lot of my work is based on real life experience or different aspects that I've learned for myself in my personal and spiritual development.
Beautiful.
So, for instance, the system that's in place in terms of the leadership is a little bit based on the Baha'i faith.
Okay. Wow.
Which is one of the fastest growing. I'm not a Baha'i, but it's one of the fastest growing religions on the planet.
Wow.
I've also got some real life people in the book,
yep,
from a futuristic perspective, looking backwards into history, which is, you know, today is the history.
Yep.
Bruce Lipton, Nassim Haramein, Greg Braden, to name but a few.
Nice.
With their permission, of course, I've got their permission to have them in the book.
Yep.
So I'm naming a few real people in there to give it some historical context. And I started writing about 4 years ago, Darren, and up until about 4 months ago, it didn't feel complete.
Really?
And the final chapter that I've written is called COVID-19.
Oh, boy.
So I've actually put in today's historic moments.
Yep.
Obviously from a slightly different perspective, if you like, a bit of conspiracy perspective.
Yep.
Because I want to fit into the Orwellian story.
Oh, yep.
Talking about the control of COVID and how we've lost some of our civil liberties.
Yep.
So that chapter's pretty fresh. That's only probably 6 weeks old.
Wow.
And was the final piece to the puzzle.
Yep.
So I feel like there's a, this final piece needed to be put in the book.
Yeah, definitely.
Quite amazing. The timing, you know, is quite amazing.
Being that you lived through this period, it obviously gave you some insight and inspiration to, you know, further develop some of those thoughts. So you had to do something about it.
Yeah, of course. I had to do a little bit of research. Everything I've done has been research as far as possible to get some, you know, truth in, or Adrian's truth, at least, in the writing. I've taken some poetic license in, of course, in a lot of the writing.
Sure.
But really showing the balance of, you know, from that space of fascism and communism into that place of freedom.
Yep.
A freedom of expression, freedom of being, living a healthier lifestyle, living more in community. Very exciting. I've been immersed in this book, particularly for the last 12 months with my editor and mentor.
Yep.
But over the last 4 years, I've been writing and researching.
And I mean, that must have been a hell of a process. What's that process like, writing and publishing a book?
This is my third published book, and I've also a co-author in 4 other books.
Wow.
I've got my Where Am I Right Now personal development book.
Yep.
And I've also got a children's book called Wendy and the Fairy Ring Secret.
Wow.
Beautiful little children's book. But this is my first novel that I've dared to put out into the world. It's a little bit, it's always a challenge because I'm bearing my soul.
Yep.
particularly, you know, the soul of criticism that can be out there of any writer can be criticized pretty easy in terms of the the content, the perfection, all those different things. So it's a huge, big emotional journey, Darren. And I know from my own journey, some of the possible sabotage patterns that could have come up and have come up that I've had to overcome to publish the book, because that little voice of doubt can raise. You know, you probably know that as a podcaster. Who am I to be a podcaster? You know, maybe some of that's come up for you, and as it does with all of us, whatever we do in life. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, particularly anything that you do that you create something, you're opening up yourself to the world and all the criticism that comes with it. But you have to you have to be strong, and you have to say, none of that matters. I'm doing it for me.
At exactly where I've come to, Darren. Exactly. This is, you know, I've had a few people, you know, mention a few things and challenge me on a few different levels. And I've said, this is my journey.
Yep.
I'll learn on the journey. Yes, I'll make mistakes. Yes, I'll have my little moments of collapse. But the bottom line is, I've written, from my perspective, you know, one of my greatest works of, you know, to take on something like I've taken on in one case of, you know, continuing the story, if you like, of this Orwellian venture. It's a pretty big task.
Definitely. And, you know, a real passion for you over the years as well, you know, being so interested in Orwell and his writings. It's an honor for you to kind of, and a privilege to take that further, you know, with your own creative license.
It certainly totally is. And I really feel I've been in that creative space, and I've certainly felt the presence of that Orwellian being, if you like. I felt like I've had some guidance from that, of course, and been sitting here a few times going, what's next? What's next? And the flash of inspiration comes through. And, and maybe just a story to share to help and to support other budding writers.
Perfect.
A part of my coaching is I love to help people to you know, get more out of life, particularly around the writing space. And somebody, a few people have asked me, what's my process to write?
Yeah.
And I say, I turn on the movie and I type as fast as I can to keep up with the visual.
Right. Love it.
The movie's in front of me moving at, you know, pretty fast speed.
Yep.
I see the characters, I hear the words, and I'm typing away frantically, just trying to keep up with what I'm downloading and seeing. Right. It's quite phenomenal.
Do you have a structured approach in the way that you wake up at a certain time every day? You pump out an hour and then you take up, or you just, it just whenever it hits?
Whenever it hits. I'm one of those lucky people, Dan, where I can sit down at any time of day or night and write.
Just start writing.
I just, I've got about 9 different books on the go at the moment in different various stages. I've just created a children's game, or a children's adult board game that's being made as well. So I'm continually downloading creative energy. And at the moment, I've told the universe to actually put it on pause for a little while.
Just take a break. Let me finish this first before you give me any more.
It's not really listening, but it has slowed, thankfully. But yeah, I'm very lucky that as soon as I sit and I can turn off the mind and drop into being creative.
Oh, that's fantastic. What a gift that is, to be able to channel that so easily.
It is. And I put it down to 20 years of meditation. I've learned to switch off the mind.
Wowee.
Yeah.
Incredible. Well, let's actually talk a bit about that, because I want to allow people to know a bit more about what you do as well, apart from your writing. So
Talk
about what you do and how you do it.
Yeah, okay. So look, let maybe start with meditation. Very lucky, 26, 27 years ago, came across the idea of meditation through my spiritual practice that I'll share something of in a moment. And then luckily, 20 years ago, I worked with a man called Dr. Ian Gawler. I don't know if you've heard of Ian Gawler in Victoria. Ian's famous for running an alternative cancer retreat center in the Yarra Valley. He's a former meditation teacher, amazing man. He lost his leg to cancer 30-odd years ago, was given months to live, went to India, saw Sai Baba, the Indian guru. Basically, Sai Baba said, go back to Australia, go and do what you're meant to do on the planet, and your leg will be fine and you'll heal and you won't die of cancer. So Ian did, came back, and I was really fortunate enough to work with Ian for 3 years at the Gawler Foundation. And learnt my meditation is where I took on the idea of becoming a vegetarian, which I've been for 20 years, healthy living, So I've been lucky to have some really great meditation teachers in my life. Now I teach meditation too. Fantastic. And it's a big part of what I do, because what I love doing, Darren, is helping people change their subconscious mind.
Yep.
And the biggest part to do that, of course, is to tune into the mind and get an understanding of what the mind is telling us. And oftentimes that is just old story, buying into fear, buying into doubt, buying into self-hatred,
yep,
not buying into self-love. So my role as a coach, and also I've been a psychotherapist and counselor for 20 years as well, is helping people to change their mindset. So I say to people, what I do, I help people to create the vision of whatever they want to do or change.
Yep.
Then we put a plan into action, and then we take action.
Yep.
So visualize, plan, and action. That's my absolute recipe for everybody I work with. And I say to people, get one of these. Get your magic wand.
Love it.
Create a wish.
Yep.
And then we take that wish into reality. We actually create it into real life. So people might say they want to get into their physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual well-being and health.
Yep.
So we create, you know, what I call the future potential self. Let's visualize who that person would look like, walk like, taste like, smell like, how much money they got in their wallet, what sort of car do they want to drive, etc. Yep. Yep. We create that vision. We look at the sabotage patterns that will get in the way, because they do.
Yep, sure.
We do some psychotherapy around that,
yep,
by clearing that space. And depending on the story and the level of trauma or belief systems, obviously the deeper we have to go. For some people, it's a bit of a walk in the park and it's not too bad. For other people, it can be months and months and months of deep psychotherapy, cleaning up some pretty deep old traumas.
Wow.
That have kept them locked in. You know, it's been a lot of psychological abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, that,
yep,
they stay in the body, they stay in the,
yeah, yeah,
in the soul. So I do somatic psychotherapy. I go into the body, do body gesture, body work,
wow,
clear it out of the body,
yep,
clear it out of the mind, create a clean slate, and then help people to get on track and stay on track. And I love that work. That's my,
yeah, I can imagine,
absolutely love it. It's
incredible, I've been doing it for
20 years. Yeah, very rewarding. It's seeing somebody shift from an old paradigm into that new paradigm,
yep,
and take on the new life, it's so rewarding. It you know, and I've worked with, you know, thousands of people across Australia and across the world, and still love the work every day, from, you know, young teenagers and sometimes children, right through to people in their 80s and 90s even sometimes, you know.
But, sensational. Yeah. And you still meditate every day, once a day, twice a day?
Every day. So not if some days I just simply don't. I just, you know, get up and it doesn't happen. But 99.9% of the time, yeah, I get out and I'll either meditate in my bed before I go to bed.
Yep.
In my room or on the beach if I go to the beach. So different, yep, places.
Yep.
At some point during the day, I generally will meditate, mostly in the mornings.
Yep.
10, 15, 20 minutes I find very ample. In meditation, there is no time.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, and for me, Darren, it's different types of meditation. For me, there might be a specific meditation seeking something,
uh-huh,
clearing something,
uh-huh,
downloading something. So there's many types of meditations, but I have one meditation that is my go-to meditation every day that I've been doing for 22 years.
I mean, what's that?
And that was given to me by a beautiful meditation teacher who said to me, go and do different meditations, by all means. But if you have one meditation and you do it every single day, you'll go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, of course, with that meditation.
Wow.
It's like anything. If you do things over and over repetitively, consciously, it'll go deeper and deeper.
Yep.
So I've been meditating on this one meditation for 22 years. And the words are the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I love it.
So that's my meditation mantra.
Yep, love it.
I'll either meditate on all the three stanzas, or just one, or even just the word truth, depending on where I'm at, what I'm looking for. And right now, after 22 years, I could probably write a pretty thick book on my understanding of those three aspects of truth from my meditative experiences. Seems from all different, many different perspectives and levels.
Wow. I mean, and one thing that's really interesting, you mentioned before, you sometimes meditate for particular, you look for certain things, you know, yeah. subjects or things to remedy in your meditation. But
yes,
isn't meditate, because I've done a few meditation courses, et cetera, et cetera. I've never continued enough, and I should. But isn't meditation about trying to not, trying to let go of everything? How do you actually search for something within a meditative state? Isn't that kind of the opposite of meditation in a way?
Yeah, no, because what yes and no. There are many forms of meditation. One is just what they call no mind, where you just turn off the chattering monkeys and just sit in silence and just let it flow, let it just flow, let it flow, let it be, you know.
Yep.
There's other specific meditations where one can tune into a particular vibrational frequency, where the mind is switched off to allow, if you like, universal wisdom to drop through.
Uh-huh.
So I become a portal, a channel, you know, many other languages for it, or an open vessel, whatever, to allow that wisdom in, because there's many forms of wisdom. Now, whether, and this is always the part of which is a great debate, great discussion, does it come from within?
Yep.
Or does it come from without? For me, it doesn't matter. It comes in. That's all I worry about.
Absolutely. The most important thing is you putting yourself in the position to receive it, wherever it's coming from.
Yep. And we are great receivers. You know, we've got the pineal gland, which is a great place to receive information from. I've got my heart, which is a great place to receive from. I've got my mind.
Yep.
So depending on what it is I'm seeking, I might tune into a different chakra base, for instance.
Yep.
If I'm after something a bit more earthy and connected, it'll be lower chakra. If I want something from the beings of the cosmos, I'll open up from my seventh chakra.
Yep.
I want to open up to creativity, I'll drop into creative space in my second chakra. So there's many portals and places.
Fantastic. I love it.
To go to. And anybody can access anything they want to when they're in the mind state to do so. That's what I believe.
Wow.
And I still feel like I'm a beginner on many levels, because I'm still not accessing everything, you know. frustration. 20 years of meditation, and there's things I'm still not, I don't have in my life, and yet I want them, or I'm visualizing them, or trying to manifest them.
Incredible. And can you maybe tell us how meditation helped you to write your book, to write this book?
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, going back to that visual of allowing the movie to unfold,
mm-hmm.
I have to be sitting in, you know, the theater of the universe, if you like, and just sitting quietly, trusting, allowing, surrendering, and then just trusting that whatever is going to come next will come in front of me. So a great process of surrender.
Yep, that's what I'm hearing. It's really about surrender and trust and trying to detach yourself from all those variables that you can't control and all that negative talk and self-doubt and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the chatter.
You know, that's what throws you.
Yeah, the mind chatter. We have like, you know, 70,000 thoughts a day or something, you know, and 90% are negative, you know, like it's constant. So clearing that space, one, to acknowledge I'm a writer. Acknowledge I'm not an editor, I'm a writer. That was a big one for me to learn, because I tried to edit everything, and that was a great gift. Somebody said to me, Adrian, stop editing, you're a writer, not an editor. Well, thank you, that's a freedom.
That's a good point, actually. So as a writer, you can just put your stuff together, you brain dump, and then someone else cleans up little bits and pieces and rearranges things. Is that what an editor does? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I've been doing for the last 12 months with Bronwyn, my editor. I've been visiting her online and telephone calls. I send her my manuscripts. Gotcha. She takes out all the unnecessary bits and pieces that are repetitive and such. I keep my flavor. I keep my story.
Yep.
She checks the grammar. Will suggest a few little things on the side column, and I say yes or no. So I'm still totally in control. Other people like editors who like take over. That's their journey too. The many forms are, but that the meditation in that is for me really important, to be in an open space to write.
Right. Yep.
Really, really important. And for me, relaxation. I'm a didgeridoo player as well.
Oh, wow.
When I'm playing didg and I'm in that meditative zone, in circular breathing, I can be in that space for, you know, an hour and just be in an absolute zone.
I've always thought that to be quite amazing. The way they use circular breathing, that just totally throws me. Wow.
Love it. I just love being in that zone. Just, you know, in the breath, out the breath, in the breath, out the breath. Just gently allowing that flow. It's very beautiful.
So when you're actually playing a didgeridoo, you get into a meditative state, do you?
I do if I'm letting go of rhythm, if I'm letting go of thinking.
Right, yep.
So when I'm in that deep circular breathing, I breathe through the nose down into the belly and I drop into a gentle rhythm. I can get very visual and very connected in that space.
Must be, that's incredible.
It is incredible. I love being in that zone.
Wow, man. That's fantastic. So meditation really helped you to clear your mind and build a stage for you to start building and accessing all your creativity without any negative doubt or negative self-chatter.
Yeah, absolutely. Because meditation for me, Dan, the biggest thing it takes away is anxiety. Which is fear. You know, anxiety is just another word for fear. Sure. And because if I'm in a fear space, it's really hard to write from a fear space.
Yeah,
it's crippling. It's really hard to be open in a fear space. So for me, meditation creates courage, takes away the fear, brings in some vulnerability. I need to trust what's coming.
Yeah.
So it's a resource that I found that I just I use every day. I'd say it's my greatest resource, meditation.
I love it. I love it. And I love the way you said that because, you know, vulnerability is a big thing because we all have the tendency to want to control everything, even though we know we can't.
Yeah.
And then when you can access that vulnerability and let go, that must be incredibly powerful.
Yeah. And not always easy, by the way. Not always easy. Don't worry. Ask people around me. I'm a great controller.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what, you know, so many years of working as a psychotherapist and a coach, you know, you've seen that firsthand.
People yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Letting go.
Yeah. And that's probably the biggest thing when I'm working with my clients and with the students. Mm. It's about finding that place of vulnerability, find that place to let go, to ask the inner questions. You know, what do I want from life?
Yep.
What is my goal? What is my vision for myself? Because a lot of what I do is about finding people's purpose, helping people to find their purpose. And a lot of people say, I don't know what my purpose is. I haven't got a clue. And I say, you know what? Give me half an hour of your time and I'll pretty much guarantee we'll find your purpose in half an hour.
Wow, that's cool.
We might not find specifically what the label is,
yep,
but we'll find out what the journey is. Oh. We'll find out what the passion around it is.
Yeah, and how you should be executing whatever you do to get closer to it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
You might not know exactly what it is, but you know that that's the journey you have to take.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. And that can come in many different forms and different labels, but it's about getting on the journey towards it. I think that's the important part.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
The journey without a predefined destination. That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I always start with my clients and students with what I call the wish.
Yep.
So that we have a guidance of where we're going in the session, because the sessions can possibly go off on about 55 different tangents depending on the client. So I always start with a wish. What is your wish for the time we spend together in this next hour and 15 minutes or hour?
Yep.
And then we've got a defined journey to go forward to get an end result, at least at the end of that session.
Sensational. Well done.
I love to have railroads to work within with a client because we always get a result that way at the end of the session.
Perfect. And are you working these days more and more with Zoom and, you know, those type of technologies, or you do more face-to-face work?
No, I've been working with Zoom for the last five, six years. I still see clients one-on-one if they prefer to, particularly if they want to go, say, and do a bush session, spend a day in the bush with me, spend time. Some clients I do see in, you know, cafes on the Goldie in different places or in their workplace.
Nice.
My coaching sometimes will go into workplace because I want to get a sense of the environment to help them with getting the environment set as well.
Yep.
But if it's one-on-one coaching, counseling is generally these days straight on Zoom. People can still jump around in the room. I still get a sense of what they're doing.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's,
how did you know that you had to become a coach, that that's what you needed to do?
Oh, great question. if I was really honest, I'd say it goes right back to when I was a teenager.
Right.
I had a gift, if you like, to work with people. Listening, connecting, inspiring. From way back, you know, 13, 14, I was already showing leadership qualities and different things in high school.
Yep.
And then I really got into the social side through things like George Orwell and reading, traveling, of course, meeting different cultures. And then I did the teacher training at the Steiner School in Melbourne in 1997. Yeah. And I was already getting a sense of wanting to become teacher, coach, facilitator. Started running men's groups already around that time. And then I came across my teacher, Yehuda Tsagar, who was running a college. Back then it was called Philophonetics, which is now Psychophonetics, which is a Rudolf Steiner-based psychotherapy. So Rudolf Steiner has been my teacher for 30 years, spiritual teacher and guide. So he put together something called Psychosophy, which is a bit like psychiatry and counseling, based on spirituality, which includes a lot of spiritual soul, spiritual work.
Love it.
So back in 1999, 21 years ago, I started going to Yehuda's lectures, started training with him, and then did a, supposed to be 3 years, it took me five, because I went to Africa and spent some time in Africa, and did 5 years doing my advanced diploma in psychotherapy and counseling. So a long time, a lot of study.
Wow, but you just knew that that was where you were meant to be.
Yeah, just absolutely felt it. And as soon as I started working in that space and studying and working with clients, I just, yeah, just knew it was my passion. It's my purpose, if you like. So I really know I have my purpose.
That's amazing. And you can really see, you know, your face lights up. You know, I can see that you just love it.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm one of those lucky people, Darren, that wake up every morning in joy, and I go to bed at night with joy. I just have a lucky disposition, partly trained, partly choice.
Yeah.
But I'm quite lucky that's my disposition as well. When I go down, I do go down occasionally, but I usually pop up pretty quick.
And we all do. We're all human.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have my moments, don't worry. I have my own counsellors and psychotherapists I work with as well. I have my own bunch of coaches. I'm a great believer in every coach having a coach and every psychotherapist having a psychotherapist. I think it's, in fact, I won't see a coach or a psychotherapist unless they're seeing a coach or a psychotherapist themselves as part of my
litmus
test.
And how do you find out? And you ask them that, or how do you find out?
Yeah, I ask them straight up. Yeah, who's your coach? Who's your psychotherapist? Yeah, who's your mentor? And if they say I haven't got one, I say see you later. I'm not interested.
Next.
Yeah, because how are you growing? How are you going to take me on a journey if you're not willing to take yourself on a journey?
That's gold. I love that. That is so cool. I mean, that little insight is already so powerful.
Yeah.
Just that changes everything about, you know, what you would expect the person that you want to use as a mentor to be. So I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, it is. And maybe for people out there, you know, check the credentials of the people you're working with.
Yeah.
Make sure that they're actually doing their work themselves. Make sure they're walking their talk.
Exactly. If they're really living and breathing their philosophy by doing, you know, by having a coach and by trying to better themselves, and then those are the people that you want to be talking to.
Yeah, I always say to people, you know, get your team around you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a very lonely journey, and it's really difficult to do the work by ourselves, because unfortunately, you know, when we're in the space, it's hard to see the sabotage patterns. It's hard to see the things that block us.
Yeah, sure.
And it's only through somebody else doing that observation, or doing some research or doing some questioning, that we can get to that place of recognizing what needs to change.
Fantastic.
Because we all have blind spots, myself included.
Absolutely. Yeah, we all go through those moments of anxiety and you know, what's the word? Tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Well, we can't see, you know, we can't see the perspective. We can't see everything around us. And we just get so caught up in that. And exactly what you're saying. I love that.
Yeah.
Well done, mate. And so if people want to find out about your book and buy your book, what's the best way to do that?
Look, the best place to connect with me is through my website. Really simple. AdrianHanks.com.
Love it. That looks amazing.
And from there, jump on the About page, 2084 page. I've got a media page with lots of videos, interviews.
Right.
There's a free video on there on meditation, for instance, for an hour.
Oh, wow.
There's lots of free gifts on there for people. I've got my store on there with my book and various things. And just on that, Darren, I do have a book launch on the 14th.
Yep, beautiful.
On the Goldie.
Yep.
Because of the lockdown laws, 100 people.
Yep.
So people can go to that website, hit the link, buy a ticket and come along to the launch. Nice. Get a signed copy of a limited edition copy I'm doing a limited edition of 300 copies. So people can order the book and or come to the launch and get a book. And there's a link on there. It's a GoFundMe page. On the website, it's got some information about the book and the characters on there as well. So I just go to the website, 2084 is one of the links on there. And if you're on the Goldie, invite me for lunch or dinner and you get me for an hour, just buy me lunch or dinner. That's it.
Love it. Well done.
And you can pick my brains for a whole time at the lunch or dinner. So I'm really open to that. I love that space.
Next time you're in Sydney, I'm going to have to do that so I can pick your brain here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I did live in Sydney for 3 years. I was in Baulkham Hills for 3 years. So awesome. I'm a little bit of a Sydney sider, bit.
Fantastic, Adrian. Well, I mean, look, it's been absolutely enlightening to chat with you today. It's been an amazing discussion. I love your energy. I love your story. I love your purpose. And I think you're going to do really well. And I wish you the best of luck with your book. I hope you sell loads of copies and you really can help people with it as well.
And, absolutely.
And I hope you do really well with your practice as well, because I think people, can really learn from you and, can get a lot of benefit from what you do.
Yeah, and may your podcast go forever. They're fantastic.
Thank you, mate. Thank you so much. Anything else that you want to leave us before the end? Like I always like to ask my guests, leave us with a thought or two before the end of the show that might help us to live our life better.
Okay. So a quick meditation tip, because we spoke a lot about meditation. So meditation is sit, close eyes.
Yep.
Be still.
That's it.
Start there.
Don't even have to worry about a mantra or anything. Just that's all.
Sit, close eyes, be still. Sit, close eyes, be still. Do that for a week. Sit, close eyes, be still. And then find a practice.
Right. And then you'll start to become more aware of your breathing, probably, and that.
Yeah, and you get into the habit of actually stopping and sitting and meditating.
Yeah, because it's a habit, isn't it? It really is. It's a discipline. You
need to set the habit. Need to find the discipline.
Yep.
To do that, because it's a discipline. It really is. And a lot of people say, every dog and his cat has started meditation.
Yep, me too.
Tried once.
I've done two or three courses.
Yeah. So for me, it's about I stop the courses.
Yep.
Stop, sit, close eyes, be still.
That's it. Oh, all right. I'm going to take you up on that.
My tip of the day.
I'm going to take you up on that.
Fantastic. Look forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, Adrian, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a sensational conversation. For everybody out there, I'm going to put all the links in the show notes, but it's all in one place. Adrian's website, adrianhanks.com. Yep. And everybody have a fantastic day. Once again, thank you, Adrian Hanks.
Thanks, Darren.
Well done, mate. And I'll see everybody very, very soon for another episode of Playing with Perspective. Bye for now.